Gather round. I'm glad everybody came out tonight. As we stand on our neighborhood corner, know that this fire that's burning represents the passion you have. Listen. I recognize all of you. Every creed and color. With that being said,
we had!
We had!
Say what?
Now beat that.
Oh, yeah!
Now what we want you all to do is sit back, y'all. And just relax, y'all. Sit back, y'all. Just relax, y'all. Sit back, y'all. And just relax, y'all. And if you dig it, let me hear your finger snap, y'all.
Now, before I finish, let me just say, I did not come here to show out. Did not come here to impress you. Because to tell you the truth, when I leave here, I'm gone. And I don't care what you think about me. But just remember, when it hits the fan, brother, whether it's next year, 10 years, 20 years from now, you'll never be able to say that these brothers lied to you, Jack.
Okay, I'll reload it.
From the sports bars to the stands, we are the voice of the fans. You are now plugged into your sports mixtape. This is the Section 357 show, and we're presenting to you the Ball Street Journal. We are your Ball Street Journal reporters, Trey, Ron, D, and myself, Floyd. Fellas, how you doing?
Doing absolutely fantastic, as always. Really, really looking forward to this show. Got a great surprise for all of our fans out there. But before I get too much into it, let me toss it over to my man, Ronnie. How you doing?
I'm doing well, D. We talked about the Richie Incognito situation for the last week and a half. It's pretty much been the number one topic in sports. So we debated amongst ourselves, but now we're going to actually talk to someone who's been inside of an NFL locker room and knows the culture and give us some insight. Also talk a little bit about life after the game. We talk a lot of times about what athletes do once the playing stops. So we'll get into that. But before we introduce him, we're going to swing it out to the left coast, somewhere between Sacramento and Santa Monica. It's my main man, L.A. Trey. Trey, what's good? Introduce our guest.
What is good, fellas? Oh, man. I'm happy to know that we got an additional guest to be a part of our Four Horsemen. I got my man Anthony Alabi. He's going to sit here and give us a better perspective of what life is like in the pros, outside of the pros, and the question that most people want to know: what is life inside the locker room? Let's get this thing started.
As usual, you can always check us out on Twitter at Section 357, as well as on Tumblr, on Podomatic, as well as on iTunes. Let's get into this interview. Anthony Alabi, welcome into the show. How's it going?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you for coming on, Anthony. My first question really is more of a general question as you're entering into the NFL.
Right.
You got drafted by the Miami Dolphins by Nick Saban, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Nick Saban, straight out from college. He was is his first year in the NFL. So Ronnie Brown and I were the only two offensive players taken that year. So it was a good deal.
You went into an NFL locker room that had some really established veterans, from Junior Seau to Jason Taylor to even a Zach Thomas. What was that like for you?
Well, anytime you go into a locker room and there's a lot of veterans in there, I mean, I think it sets the tone of what the locker room is, and I think it's a culture that you come into, and you learn kind of the norm of the locker room and the temperature of the locker room. I think having veterans is a plus. It's a positive. I think if you don't have that, and if you have a team that's really, really young, it can cause a lot of problems, because I think there's a lot that gets kind of, you know, passed over that people don't regulate. And I think having JT in there, having Kevin Carter, Vonnie Holiday, Zach Thomas, Junior Seau, those guys, they were kind of, you know, the coaches under the coach. You know, in the locker room, when something went down or there was problems, you went to them and they took care of it, because they were respected for what they did on the field. And I think having that really helped me as far as knowing kind of the do's and don'ts of the NFL, kind of knowing what's okay to do with your teammates, what's not, you know, stuff that's disrespectful, stuff that is respectful. So I think, you know, having that kind of a thing, that element, is a big thing. And I think when you don't have that, you have issues arise like, you know, the ones that we're seeing now in the media.
With so much veteran leadership around you and you becoming a new rookie, of course, I'm assuming that certain things and expectations were met for all rookies. Some people call it hazing. Some people call it paying your dues. Can you talk about some of the things that you had to endure? And more importantly, was there anything that was presented to you as far as like paying your dues that maybe you might have paused a little bit on, but still did anyways because you're the rookie?
Well, I mean, naturally as a rookie, I mean, you have to think about the mentality of guys coming out of college and going into the NFL. No matter where you were, you came out of college, you were the man. You know what I mean? You were the best player on your team or one of the best players on your team. You were probably a championship program in some aspect, whether you won the conference, you won the national title, whatever, went to a bowl game. So you were a big fish. And I think coming into the NFL, it's a real reality check and it's kind of a culture shock because you come to that and all of a sudden you're at the bottom of the totem pole again. So I think, you know, that first and foremost is a shock. And then when veterans come to you and they're just like, you know, you got to carry all the helmets out to practice and carry all the pads back from there. You know, it's a thing. You don't want to do it, but you're going to do it because you respect these guys and you know that you're just paying your dues and everybody has to do it. So as far as that goes, there's always a lot of things that you don't want to do, but you're going to do. Now, as far as the hazing or whatever it is, it's typically light. I mean, there's nothing like super bad. I mean, you're going to get, you know, cold water dumped on you. You're going to get jumped. You're going to get like dumped into the hot tub or whatever. Stuff like that happens. You're going to have to take the helmets out or clean this, clean that. You may even have, and then especially with dinner, you have to take the entire offensive line out or your position out to dinner, and it's usually a few $1,000s. So stuff like that happens. That's kind of a norm of being a rookie and having to go through those things. It's just something that everybody had to do, and you kind of pass it along when it comes to the next rookie. You're like, well, look, I had to pay like $14,000 for dinner that night. You're going to pay $15 or $20. You know what I mean? It's just kind of the way it goes. So that's kind of the stuff that went on when I was there. I don't know if it's amplified now. I don't think so. I think the way it's just, you know, the same thing that everybody has to go through whenever you come into something new. So,
Anthony, if I could stick to that point, I kind of talked to this with the crew earlier that if we ever as fans fully pulled back the curtain on what goes on in an NFL locker room, I think a lot of fans would honestly be shocked. But one of the many facets of this whole thing with Incognito was the race aspect. And I just gotta ask you straight up. Have you ever heard a white teammate use the word nigger in response to or are talking about a black teammate? If so, how did you deal with it? Mm-hmm. Or is it just something that doesn't happen?
Honestly, I've never heard that. I mean, and I've been in maybe three different locker rooms and with different teams, and I've never heard a white teammate refer to a black teammate that way. That's not, I mean, not to say it didn't go on. I just never heard it. Nobody was open with it that way, and that's just something that wasn't, I don't think, would have been tolerated. Now, on that point, you know, if you're right. If you peel back the curtain and you look into an NFL locker room, it's not a place for the public. It's not for that. These are grown men and in a high stress job, and they're doing things, you know, we have to do things on a daily basis that are pushing our emotional, mental, and physical abilities to the limit. So if you have that, you're going to blow off steam, and the way we blow off steam is different than the way the public would blow off steam. So those things are meant to be private. So when you pull that back and you start putting it in the media and you start showing other people that, they're going to take it in a completely different context because they're not used to that. That's not something that's the norm for them. That's not their culture. Do you understand what I'm saying? So in this case, a lot of times, you know, with the story that's being presented out there, there's a lot of factors that have to be taken into account before you start going off as far as, you know, what's been going or what's happening in between those guys and all that other stuff. The racial stuff, I completely don't agree with. That I've never heard of, but, I mean, I don't know those guys. I don't know their history. Maybe he allowed Incognito to do that kind of stuff. I don't know, but that's just something that I wouldn't put up with it. But I don't know. I'm not him. You know what I mean?
Now, you guys are considered gladiators by most people. And when you have a bunch of gladiators around each other, there's going to be conflict. There's no way around it. Eventually,
right?
People are going to butt heads. Now, I'm not certain if you've been in some type of conflict before with another player, but if so can you explain to us that whole process? Does the locker room heal itself? Does it jump up to the coaches? Does it go up to upper management? How does the team heal around each other when there's so much conflict and at odds because people are fighting for positions, time, respect? How do you heal?
Well, the thing is, I mean, that's what I talked about earlier when I talked about veteran leadership. That's a huge thing, and it's not to be taken lightly. A lot of times in a locker room, if you have a bunch of young guys in there, when there are fights, it can be a polarizing effect. It can cause, you know, offense to be against defense. It can cause one position against another, and it can cause, you know, white versus black, which is what you absolutely don't want in a locker room. But if you have that veteran leadership, if you have those guys that have been around for a long time that can quell that and can take out that fire before it starts, then that's what can help. I mean, the healing process from something like that is basically what I think, you know, the Dolphins are doing. They're not in public enticing anything. Nobody's making bold statements. I think the best thing to do is acknowledge that something's going on. You don't know the details. You don't know the history. So leave it alone. And I think that's the biggest thing that you can do with the team is come and be like, we're all we need, and we don't want anybody else coming in and messing with it. We'll take care of it on our own internally. And the way that you take care of it is, one, you get down to the truth, what's going on. You find out exactly what's happening and who did wrong, who did what, and then you fix that problem. It's not about taking sides. It's not about, you know, trying to figure out, you know, who's a bitch or who's not a bitch. It's one of those things that you got to figure out where the problem lies, and you got to stop it before it becomes before it becomes a plague in that locker room.
Anthony, one of my biggest questions with the Jonathan Marr situation and just the locker room in general, that we know football players, while clearly are not dumb, they're not like nuclear physicists. We talk about, as Trey talked about, the gladiator mentality. And how do a locker room deal, not necessarily with conflict, but just guys who are different? Jonathan Marr in a very educated background. How does the locker room, Anthony, deal with guys who are just different, who are not just like the typical athlete, guys who maybe have a different personality, different look? Because one of the things that I've seen with the Jonathan Marr situation is that he was just a different guy. And some call him soft, some kind of a weirdo. But how does the locker room deal with guys who are just different personalities than what you would think of as a quote-unquote typical athlete? How do they ingratiate that guy, make him feel a part of things?
Well, I think, first of all, to answer that, like, you have to go back to just what an NFL locker room is like. And I think, you know, I was explaining it to friends earlier, an NFL locker room, if you look, and anybody who, you know, if you have friends, you guys do stuff together, you joke around and you mess with each other all the time. In an NFL locker room, because of the stress and the egos and everything that's in there, the testosterone level in that place is 1,000 times more. So any kind of, you know, weakness, sensitivity you have is going to get exploited, and people are going to make fun of it. It's dark comedy. You know, it's going to be something that you're not happy about, but you have to learn to create a thick skin for yourself. And if you don't have that, it'll drive you nuts. And I think, you know, in his case, it's one of those things that if you are weird and you are different, or you're not the typical, you know, guy that the typical guy that's in that locker room, you have to be so confident in that you have to be okay with it. And you see that all the time with guys that, you know, Clinton Portis used to have these little characters that he put on where he put on a bow tie and be weird. You know, you'd have, who's the linebacker from Cincinnati that hosted his own show? Can't remember his name. But anyway, you have those personalities, you would have those guys that were different, and they were a little bit weird and a little bit off-center, but that was okay because they were so confident in themselves that even if you made fun of it, they owned it. And a lot of times, just like in high school, if you own your weirdness, if you own whatever makes you different, people will leave it alone. You know what I mean? You got to keep your strange. And I think if that's the case and that happens and you do that, you'll be okay. But I think if you're not 100% confident in it, if you're a little insecure about it, it will exploit that and it'll drive you crazy.
How much of a responsibility falls on the other teammates to defend the lesser of them?
Okay,
And on top of it,
was the unwritten code violated by not healing as a unit in the locker room and leaving the team and then having the media and lawyers decide the outcome?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, in accordance to your first question, I think the biggest thing is, you know, there is no responsibility of the other teammates to defend somebody. I mean, we are a team, and just like in a family, when brothers and sisters fight, you know, it's what happens. You guys fight. But if somebody else comes in and tries to pick on your little brother or your little sister, you're going to defend them. And I think it's a, kind of the same thing in a locker room, whereas, like, just because, you know, somebody gets picked on or somebody's made fun of, it's not my job to sit here and protect him. You're a grown-ass man, and you're playing a grown-ass sport. So it's one of those things. If you get picked on and you don't like it, defend yourself. You know, if you're not witty enough, do your homework on somebody and be witty enough. You know, you can't sit here and expect somebody else to defend you just in the same way. You know, you have to be prepared. And it's just, it's almost that kind of way in a locker room where, yeah, it's humor and it's joking. But if it hurts, you got to fight back. And if you don't like it and it gets to the point where it's affecting you, then tell your coaches, tell the veterans or whatever, and then they'll know, okay, that's a dude you don't mess with. But you're also opening yourself up because they know you're sensitive now and it bothers you. So it's one of those things that you kind of have to take care of yourself in that aspect. Yes, you have teammates. Yes, they care about you. But it's not their job to monitor you on a daily basis and be like, whoa, hey, guys, don't mess with Anthony today. Like, don't, you know, leave him alone. It's not their job. Now, if you have friends on the team and you have guys that you're close to, yeah, that'll happen. But it's not necessarily their duty to do that for you. And as far as your second question, that was a big violation. You don't go to the media and you don't tell the media stuff that goes on in the locker room. That's not something you do. And that's not okay. Because those things, like we've been talking about, those are things that happen in the locker room. Those are things that are private. And those are things that people don't understand in the public if it does come out. People aren't going to understand that kind of humor. People aren't going to understand the way that we talk to each other because they're not there. They don't know the history of it. You take it at face value for something that you see without knowing the history of it, of course you're going to be appalled. Of course you're going to say, oh my God, I can't believe they said that to each other. Not knowing the history of what they have. So I think, you know, in that aspect, yes, that was a big violation.
Anthony, looking at your transition away from the NFL, I wanted to get your perspective on what was the biggest lesson that you learned on the business side of your experience in the NFL as you stepped away?
As far as, you know, the biggest thing that I learned was I remember talking about this with my dad and saying that in college, it was a team. And, you know, you love playing football and you love playing it with your other teammates because you guys were together for 4 or 5 years. And that was a thing. And you cared and that's what you wanted. When you get to the NFL, you have to think of yourself as an independent contractor. And a lot of times you have to go out there with a blank logo on your helmet and you have to play the best you can for yourself and not to let your teammates down. But understand the fact that there is no loyalty in the NFL. It's a business and that's what it's about. And I think, you know, get to that point where you have to do what's best for you because you're the only one that's going to look out for you. Teams don't have loyalty anymore. And not saying that they should or they shouldn't. It's a business. So you do what's best for the team. And I think that's the biggest lesson that I learned is that you are an independent contractor. Every time you play, you're on audition. Because what happens is if they decide to cut you or something goes on, you have to go to another team. And you have to make sure that the video that you have out there of yourself is the best that you have.
Yeah, Anthony, yeah. I'd like to keep it along those lines. First off, thanks so much for coming on. I know we've berated you with a bunch of questions about the whole Martin and Incognito situation. Something that
no, it's fine.
You're only a little bit familiar with, but I'd like to ask some more tougher questions about what you've dealt with.
Okay.
Just talk about what it's like being an NFL player, being a pro athlete that's had to fight against injuries and fight for your job. How does that go being a person? Because I know as a fan, quite oftentimes we treat these players as chess pieces, as fantasy pieces, and you know,
right.
It's easy to say, well, you know, wow, man, this running back sucks. We should cut him. But
yeah.
How does that feel as a person when you know your talents and then you see them hindered by injury?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's 100% frustration, and that's the biggest thing. Is that you can't. It's hard because you know what you're capable of. You know what you can do. But if you get injured, or if you're that guy that's injury prone, you know there's nothing you can really do because you know eventually, like I said, it is a business, and the team's going to have to do what they have to do to make moves to improve themselves. And you know, guys that are injured all the time or guys that are that have to deal with that, who are veterans and who are trying to make it and who are trying to really do the best they can and keep getting injured or keep getting hurt or have to fight through that, it's a problem. And that's why the average NFL career is only 3 years. Because, you know, that's not because guys suck or somebody's terrible. There's a lot of factors that go into that, just like getting to the NFL, there's a lot of factors that go into that as well. So, you know, there's so many things that you have to deal with on so many different levels to be successful at that level, that an injury or, you know, something of that nature can really hinder you. And it can be extraordinarily frustrating and taxing mentally for somebody. So, and you know, the mental aspect of the game is a huge part of the game. And if your mental is messed up because of your injuries, then, you know, you could find yourself on the couch and without a career.
I wanted to lighten the mood up just a little bit. All right.
Okay.
So it's back in like 2005, I guess, or somewhere in between like 05 and 08. And, you go to the video game store and you see that copy of Madden on there and you grab it.
Yeah.
Right? You pop it in your disc, and I know the first thing you did. You didn't even got to tell me. I already know the first thing you did.
I went right to my player to look at the speed.
You went right to your player and looked at your stats. I know. So
yeah.
Tell me, what were you thinking? Did they represent you right?
I think they always underestimated my speed, my chop, but I'm a little upset about that, but I'm okay with it. But the biggest thing, I mean, I've been on every Madden game from 2000, you know, in college to 2010. So, I mean, they improved. I thought they got better. I thought they got more accurate as time went on, but it was an amazing feeling to get those and to, like, go to the video game store or to get screenshots from your friends with them playing as you. So that was always a fun thing. Those checks didn't hurt either.
So all of us here are fantasy football players, or we all have our own league, and we talk a considerable amount of trash and try to beat each other. Are you in any current fantasy football leagues?
Yeah, I have a fantasy football league going right now.
Okay, do you enjoy it? I mean, is it more of like a like how does that feel to be in this position where you can swap and trade out players as easily as they are like football cards?
Yeah, I know. Well, I'll tell you what, my first year playing fantasy, I didn't really play it after I retired because of the fact that it was just irritating. And I every time I watched football, I would study it and I wasn't enjoying it. So I didn't do it. But then my friends finally convinced me to play. And when I played my first year, my rookie year, I won the whole thing. And so I was like, oh, this is easy. And in the past 2 years, I've been in the bottom two. So I'm extremely frustrated with fantasy football right now. But on that note, it's fun. It is fun to be able to have that power and do that thing. But it's a little bit of insight of how scary it is that people are like that, where you can look at a player and you can be like, oh, this guy sucks, or just cut him, or he's terrible, or this and that. And it's funny because I know those guys, and it's like, this is their livelihood. This is how they feed their family. And people don't see that. They just see like, oh, this guy's terrible, this guy sucks, or I just want to get rid of him, or, you know, I hope that he's just out for the season or this and that. And that's really bad. You know what I mean? It's kind of that same thing that happened with Matt Schaub when he went down and the fans were all cheering about it. I understand that you have your team and you have who you're cheering for, but you have to understand at the end of the day, these guys are human beings and they try, you know, they're just trying the best they can. So I think that's a big thing that people need to really take into account when they're doing these things. You know what I mean?
Anthony, let me jump in real quick and just take it back to something that you said. You mentioned that you were in some of the NCAA games. How did
Right.
you feel, certainly about the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit and back when you were in college, with your likeness being used before you started to see those checks that you mentioned?
Yeah, that was terrible. I mean, that was one of the most frustrating things, was that you were in college, you were on scholarship, but you didn't, I mean, like $20 in college lasted me like 2 weeks. Like I was, it was one of those things that you just had to ration everything as much as you could because you didn't have any money. But it's funny that you didn't have any money, yet you would go by the bookstore and see your jersey being on sale for like $120, but just because it didn't have my name on the back, I didn't get any of that money. And same thing with the video games. You know, you see the team is a walking billboard for Nike, or you see that, like, you know, our body, our face, everything else is on the video game for Madden for NCAA, but it doesn't have our name on it, so we don't get paid for it. And that's really frustrating, because that was the thing we complained about tons, because we're making as much money, millions of dollars for all these people, and we don't see a dime of that. And all you have to do is you have to go back to, you know, and yes, we're getting an education. And trust me, I appreciate that. I got my master's degree because of it. But at the same time, I got my education, but somebody else is getting millions of dollars. I don't think it really equates up to the same thing. And not, I'm not saying one way or another, I'm not saying that college players should be paid, but I am saying it needs to be recognized what we're doing for the universities, what we're doing for certain brands, and, you know, what we're doing for the entertainment industry.
Anthony, I would like for you to let all of our listeners know where you are right now. What's going on in your life now as you've embarked upon your career in Hollywood?
Well, it's been going good. I retired in 2009, moved to Los Angeles after that, and started acting and writing. And it's been going really well. I mean, I've been in a lot of guest stars, national commercials, stuff like that. So I've been acting probably now for about 3 years. And it's been, you know, I've been busy. So that's a good thing if you're busy in Hollywood. And as far as writing goes now, we're working on pilots and hoping to get some of these out and get the networks interested in doing that kind of stuff. In the downtime, I do have a sketch comedy group that we come out with little sketches on YouTube and do stuff like that for Funny or Die, who really likes us and always puts all of our stuff up. So I'm just having fun now. You know, it's one of those things that I feel like I paid my dues playing in the NFL, and now I get to have fun and do what I want to do for me and enjoy it. So, you know, it doesn't get much better than this, really.
My last question, Anthony, as it relates to that, being able to walk away from the game in seemingly good condition physically and mentally, what do you think about, or I guess, what's your perspective when you hear of guys who, like a Tony Dorsett or a Brett Favre, who have talked about the long-term concussion, perhaps related issues, or just general physical ailments? What do you think about as you continue to read and hear about those stories of guys who play for a lot longer and are definitely paying the price for that?
You know, here's the thing is you can't ever – everybody has their own path, and you can't ever judge somebody like that because those guys love the game, and they were in love with the game, and they wanted to play as long as they could and do what they wanted with it, and I commend that. I do. I think that's an amazing thing, and, you know, it's unfortunate that that's a byproduct of the game because of, you know, how physical and violent the sport is that we play. But, you know, like my cousin, he played for 12 years, and he was a defensive end. And, you know, he has a lot of injuries and he has other stuff that's happened to him. But those are the choices that you make. And I think what I used to tell people when they would ask me that same question of, like, why do you play a sport that's so violent knowing that it could hurt you later on is, one, who wants a good-looking corpse? And, two, what are you willing to fall on your sword for? You know what I mean? What is the one thing that you're willing to do that, yeah, I know I'm going to get hurt, but I enjoy doing this. Or I want to push myself. Or I want to see how far I can go. And those things can happen. But at the end of the day, when you're on your deathbed, the only thing that really matters is, were you happy? And I think that's the only question that when somebody asks you, you know, if you can say yes to that, then you're fine. Tony Dorsett, Brett Favre, all those guys, at the end of the day, when they're on their deathbeds, whether they're injured or not, or whether they're limping or whatever's happening to them, if they can answer that question and say, yeah, I was happy and I did it as hard as I could and the best that I could for as many years as I could, I think that's the only thing that we need to be concerned about, is that they were happy and that they did it. It's unfortunate, yes, that these are the side effects of to what's going on. And the fact that the NFL is taking steps now to kind of help those guys medically more and more, you know, it's not perfect. It's not great right now, but it's getting better. It's better than it was 5 years ago even. But I think, you know, that's the answer to that question, that if you're happy at the end of the day and you did what you wanted to do, that's the best thing. I left because I wasn't the happiest I could be. And so now I'm doing something that makes me extraordinarily happy. And I got to do that. And I'm lucky because I got to do that. And it helped me in what I'm doing now.
Anthony, let the people know where you're at as far as social media, whatever new projects you got going on, just kind of where people can connect with you. And once again, thank you for being on the show with us.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me. You can find all of our stuff if you go to Muddasucka Comedy, MuddaSucka Comedy, on YouTube. Our YouTube channel is there. You can see all of our sketches that we put out pretty much every other week. Also, I'm on a guest star on a TV show recently called The Haunted Hathaways. It's on Nickelodeon, and it should be out in the next month or so. Also, I have a couple of national commercials coming out, one for Nike with LeBron James and Kobe Bryant, and another one for GameStop. But that's, you know, that's it. That and just looking for stuff to come out in the next year or so. So we'll see.
If you are what you say you are, a superstar, then have no fear. The camera's here and the microphones, and they wanna know. Oh, oh, oh.
The return.
If you are what you say you are, a superstar, then have no fear. The crowd is here.
A fresh, cool young Lou, trying to cash his microphone, check 212. Wanna believe my own hype, but it's too untrue. The world brought me to my knees, what have you brung you? Did you improve on the design, did you do something new? Where you naming on the guest list, who brung you? You, the more famous person you come through, and the sexy lady next to you, you come too. And then the hitman, standing outside of heaven, waiting for God to come and get me. I'm too uncouth, unschooled to the rules, and too gumshoe. Too much of a newcomer, and too uncool, like Shadow in the veil. I battle with it well, though I need a holiday like Lady Who Sung Blue. Go back, whatever you did, you undo. Heavy as heaven, the devil on me, two tons too.
If you are what you say you are, a superstar, then have no fear. The camera's here and the microphones, and they wanna know. Oh, 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 yeah.
And you better wear your shades. Spotlights here can burn holes through the stage, down through the basement, past the Indian graves where the dinosaurs laid, and out through China, nearly misses airliners, magnified times five. That's pointed at the rhyme of ricochets off the moon and sets the forest ablaze. Now that's important to say, cause even with all that, most of us don't want it to fade. Duh. We want it to breed, meaning we want it to grow, meaning we want it to stay. Like the governor called and he told him to wait, unstrap him from the chair and put him back in his cage. The audience ain't fazed, and they ain't gonna clap, and they ain't gonna praise. They want everything back that they paid, cause they've been waiting since 10 to see the lights get dim.
If you are what you say you are.
Welcome back to the show, the Section 357 show. Special thanks to our guest, Anthony Alabi, for giving us some great perspective on life in the game as well as life after the game. But you know how we do here on the show. Last call for alcohol or something like it. D, last call, what do you have?
I got to pour out a little bit of wine for my man Messi. Going to be out. You hate to see these stars, and Messi is certainly a big football star. But I think that his loss is kind of lessened by the fact that we don't see him on American TV. So a big loss for the sport of football, and I'm certainly pouring out a little wine for him, but I wonder how it's going to resonate with the American audience.
Last call for alcohol or something like it out there on the left coast. L.A. Trey, what do you have, man?
My last call is just to the NFL and the fact that, let's just be honest, it's grown man soap operas. And this season is a perfect example of it. I mean, we've had everything from the Incognito incident to two head coaches almost dying, one almost on the field from catastrophic heart situations. We've had massive injuries. We've had instances of people that we thought that were going to be on top are now on the bottom as a result of scheduling and just regular weird coaching things. It's just been one long, gigantic soap opera, and I, for one, have completely bought into it. So this is just a quick shout-out slash love note to the NFL. Thank you for once again hitting me with the complete unexpected.
Last call for alcohol. Big Shot Ron up there in Chicago. What do you have, man?
My last call goes out to some of the commercials and the advertising we've seen recently in sport. And I want to give a big shout out to the Blake Griffin Team Griffin ad. Corny as I don't know what, silly as I don't know what, but definitely enjoy it. So big shout out to the people over at Kia. Definitely doing the thing on the marketing side with the Team Griffin ad. Definitely enjoyed that. That's my last call.
As always, my last call always goes out to the fans. Thank you for hanging out with us. Thank you for checking us out at Section 357 on Twitter. Find us on Podomatic. Find us on Stitcher as well as on iTunes by doing a simple search for the Section 357 show. With that being said, good luck to you and your favorite sports teams out there wherever you might be. This is the Section 357 show where we always have the best seats in the house. Until next time, take care. Every old president's to represent me. Every old president's to represent me.